Day, June 12th, Committee on Rules, we're going to open a public hearing, and it will be a public hearing only on House Bill 3606. I'd like to welcome Representatives Vic Backlund and Senator Ryan Deckard. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Please.
Co-chairs Brown and Clarno and members of the Rules Committee. For the record, I'm Vic Backlund, representative from House District 25, which is close to Salem, starts with Kaiser, and works its way through St. Paul and Newburgh. I'm here to advocate on behalf of House Bill 3606. This bill provides that the state may enter into grant agreements for 30 years to allow the use of income tax revenues from the salaries of home and visiting players and top management to partially fund the stadium and bring a Major League Baseball team to Portland. And that's the essence of House Bill 3606. There are, of course, many details. I think the proposal is loaded with safeguards for both the state and the taxpayers. For example, all of the baseball risk, business risk, is placed on the grantee and the team owner. It would not divert any existing taxes to baseball. It would not create any debt for the state. And the state's credit rating would be unaffected. I believe that if the taxing of the income of the players and the front office personnel and other high-salaried folks was not sufficient, the state would still not be involved, would not have to pay the bonds. The state is removed from those financial obligations. And I would ask, I could go on in that vein, but I don't want to take that much time. But I could ask, you know, what are the benefits of House Bill 3606? I think, first of all, we need to look at the economic benefits. I think it's been well documented that maybe at least 1,500 relatively high-paying construction jobs would be in the offing almost immediately. It would take up to 3 years to build a baseball stadium. Our unemployment rate in Oregon's building trades is hovering around 40%. I believe once the stadium is built, there would be a tremendous amount of economic activity created. Downtown Portland, for example, would have around the stadium all kinds of retail shops, restaurants, hotels, those kinds of economic situations or businesses. I think this bill is about economic activity and jobs that Oregon could sort of use. I also think that there are good examples that we could look to other cities that would support this. For example, not too many years ago, Baltimore built Camden Yards, and the economic activity resulting from that has been unbelievable. We have a number of letters and statements to that effect. Other new ballparks recently have been built in Denver, which has had a tremendous resurgence in downtown economic activity. And, of course, we're well aware of Seattle and San Francisco and other ball clubs, including one ballpark in Cleveland. So I think there's a tremendous benefit in terms of the economic activity that this bill would create. I also think that because of this economic activity, there would be more money going into the general fund. And that would allow, if we increase the size of the pie, as some of us like to say, that would allow more revenue for education and other services that all of us value. I also think that baseball, as a game, as a sport, is perhaps the best one that we could bring to Oregon. Baseball is a game that goes at a pace where families can go to a ball game and can visit and can discuss all kinds of things, not just baseball. Can't do that at an NBA basketball game or NFL football game. I believe baseball would be perfect and would be a great complement to the NBA Portland Trailblazers. Finally, I would just close with with hopefully a dramatic statement, one that would leave you remembering this. House Bill 3606 asks nothing of existing taxpayers, nothing from constituents of all of the lawmakers in this body, whether they come from Bedford or LeGrand or Coos Bay. The $150 million that would be necessary for a share of the cost of the Major League Baseball Stadium would be repaid from revenue that this state would never see without a Major League Baseball team. So I believe in balance and a close look or a broad overall look that House Bill 3606 is a good bill, and I would again urge the committee to look favorably upon House Bill 3606. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, Madam Vice Chair, and Mr. Vice Chair is not here. Ryan Deckert, State Senator from Beaverton and Southwest Portland. You're going to hear a great deal about this proposal, ins and outs of it, so I would really limit my comments to three things. And first, it is to thank you for having a public process with this bill. I think it's very important that this bill be publicly aired, publicly voted on, rather than sent to a committee to not have a hearing. And so I want to first thank this committee for acting on the bill and doing our democratic job. And I think proponents and opponents should come in a public hearing and make their case. I think this bill is unique, and Representative Vaclin really hit on it, in that if you review, and I think the best way to put it is, if you forget this is about a baseball team, and I'd only ask you to perhaps forget that for one moment and think of the opportunity that this just is any other business. I just got out of the Senate Revenue Committee. We have passed a number of incentive programs, and we did it again today, to lure new private industry jobs and new private business to the state. And we just passed a comprehensive enterprise zone bill, not in this room, one over, just 2 hours ago. We did it with at least more of a public subsidy or more of a public contribution than the bill before you contemplates at all. Because this really asks anyone who does not want to pay or have a role in this proposal simply does not. And there I think it's helpful to look at the 13 or 14 other cities that have had this question before them in states, because that is really the uniqueness of what we're very pleased to bring you, is a proposal that asks the players and the top executives through their salaries to fund the construction of the state portion. And I only look up to Seattle, which is having an incredibly successful experiment, but they had to, in a special session of their legislature, ask a much more difficult question. They had to ask their taxpayers, not indirectly, but directly, to pay $372 million towards the construction of Safeco Field. Now, I will tell you, I think that would be a very difficult conversation for this legislature to have. And so I think that is really the beauty that the House saw in sending this bill over to us, is that this does not ask that question to a legislature that is dealing with a severe budget shortfall. We get to, I think, promise revenue generation for the state of Oregon, because we get to ensure that new jobs and new revenue. And I think the third point that I would make, Madam Co-Chair and Madam Co-Chair, is that the quality of life enhancement. We've talked a lot about the economic development. We've talked a lot about the salary and benefits. But I will tell you, I think there is a unique quality of life component that Major League Baseball is probably the one professional sport that really offers this, that still today, you can't do it in professional basketball and you certainly can't do it in professional football. Still today, a mom and a dad and their two kids can go to a game for probably under $40. And I think that is the uniqueness about this national pastime that certainly makes it a very interesting and intriguing proposal for the state. With that, I will thank you for the hearing and look forward to a chance to vote on this on the floor of the Senate. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions? Thanks. Representative Schaffler, are you here to testify or are you here as an observer? Okay, thank you. Next up, Howard Levine, Marty Lynn Satoff, and Kate Richardson. Are you bringing two? Are you two? Okay, are you two? Okay, I'll meet you away.
Okay.
Chairs Brown and Clarno and Senators, my name is Howard Levine, and I'm Governor Kulongoski's policy advisor on bringing Major League Baseball to Oregon. I'm here today to convey the Governor's support for HB 3606, a bill that will finance up to $150 million of the cost of a Major League Baseball park to be located in Portland. The Governor has been following the progress of this bill closely, and as he told Commissioner Selig in a letter in March, he's a longtime fan of baseball and wants to see the best of the best playing in Oregon. The Governor realizes that many legislators and members of the public are asking, why this bill and why now? So let me briefly give you the Governor's perspective on both of these questions. Although you will be hearing from many experts on the technical details of HB 3606, I can tell you that the Governor feels comfortable supporting the bill because of the extraordinary protection it provides to both the state and taxpayers. His bottom line is this: building a baseball park in Portland cannot dip into the general fund or take any money away from any government service, nor can it leave the state and taxpayers liable to bondholders during the term of the bonds. The Governor's General Counsel, Marty Sathoff, will be discussing risk issues in her testimony, but I do want to point out that the Governor is satisfied that 3606 meets his bottom line requirements. This is true because of the protections for the state built into the bill, including the fact that the bill requires the state to do absolutely nothing until there is a grant agreement that is approved by DAS and Treasury, and because the income tax revenue that will be earmarked to pay off the bonds would not otherwise be available for government services. The Governor is also looking on the other side of the ledger. How will the people of Oregon benefit from having a Major League Baseball team in Portland? This gets to the question of why now. First, this is not a decision that can wait for better economic times. If 3606 does not pass, Major League Baseball may not come this way again for a generation. On the other hand, if it does pass, Portland will likely get one or more additional bites out of the baseball apple, even if the Montreal Expos end up going elsewhere. Second, as much as the Governor loves baseball, he loves his four basic principles of governance even more. One of those principles is that we must grow the Oregon economy and put people back to work. So his message to the proponents has been essentially this: don't cork the benefits. I'm only interested in what's real. The Governor now believes that bringing a Major League team to Oregon will mean real economic benefits for the citizens of Oregon. There are the 1,500 high-wage construction jobs that are very much needed at this time of severe unemployment. There will be new money for the general fund after the bonds are paid off, and possibly sooner, depending on how much revenue is collected from the ballplayers' salaries. It is also possible that taxes paid by the ballplayers on endorsement contracts and investment income will go to the general fund and be available for other government services. The Governor wants to increase tourism, in part by branding Oregon as the state with the most enjoyable and comfortable summer weather. Bringing a Major League team will help us do that. The Major League team will draw new dollars from outside Oregon, especially Clark County, Washington. It will help stem the outflow of Oregon dollars that are now going to support the Mariners. This is a significant amount of money. Right now, Oregonians make up a large segment of the Mariner fan base. The Governor is also impressed by the support this project is getting from business and labor. This is no surprise. As Senator Decker suggested, if you take baseball out of the headline, what you end up with is an environmentally clean industry with an $80 million payroll and no cost to the taxpayers. Finally, there is the intangible, but the Governor believes real benefit that attracting a team to Oregon will bring a very positive national spotlight to Portland in this great state. We know that Portland is a first-tier city. We want the rest of the world to know it, too. And just one personal observation, which sort of builds on what Representative Backlund said. I worked for the mayor of Baltimore when Camden Yards was being debated, and subsequently built, and many of the same legitimate questions that are being raised now were raised then regarding cost and timing and benefit to rural communities. And Camden Yards, as most people recognize now, really turned out to be a spectacular success. You'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in Maryland who regrets the decision to build it. And the governor believes that if this committee and the legislature pass 3606, we'll have a similar success story here. Thank you.
Thanks.
Co-Chair Clarno, Co-Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Marty Lynn Sathoff, and I'm the governor's general counsel. Although I was not involved in the initial drafting of House Bill 3606, I have been working closely with Mr. Levine and my colleagues at Treasury, Department of Revenue, and DOJ, as well as Steve Cantor and some of the other proponents, to make sure that this bill protects both the state and the Oregon taxpayers. I have practiced as a business attorney in both the public and private spheres, and as you know, every business deal carries with it a level of risk. Every contract and every business arrangement the state enters, including every bond the state issues or authorizes, carries some risk. Similarly, the arrangement contemplated by House Bill 3606 is no different than many business deals in which the state agrees to accept risk under certain terms and conditions. The question in any business arrangement is always, what is the level of risk that the state is willing to accept? I believe the level of risk created by House Bill 3606 is low, and maybe lower than most, if not all, of the state's arrangements, including those that involve bonds. But it's important to remember that this arrangement is not about bonding. It is a mere grant. There are several reasons I believe the level of risk created under House Bill 3606-03 is low. The first is that the state, in this instance, will not be the issuer of any bonds contemplated by this arrangement. The state's role and risk in this transaction will be one step removed from an issuer. Under this bill, if the circumstances warrant the risk, the state will commit to pass through to a third party, the grantee, what the bill refers to as incremental baseball tax revenues, which in plain English means the personal income taxes paid by the players and top management. Those monies, which as you will hear many times today, would not otherwise be available to the state, are then used to pay certain costs related to the stadium, which could be debt service on bonds. The bill makes clear that the state is not issuing bonds, and it is not guaranteeing bonds or other debt. Nothing in this bill gives the state the authority to issue bonds or to become a guarantor of bonds or any other debt. Moreover, the state is not pledging its full faith and credit or its taxing power to pay off any debt created by a third party, including bonds to finance the stadium. There are other protections as well. For example, no state action or commitment is authorized at all until all other financing is in place. This bill merely provides the state with authority to take those actions if and when an acceptable deal is on the table. Even then, the risk to the state is further reduced because DAS is not required to enter into any grant agreement unless it believes the benefits and additional protections negotiated warrant the risk assumed under that agreement. Further, DAS can only enter into an agreement with the approval of the treasurer and if the agreement meets certain requirements under the bill. One of those requirements is that the interests of the state of Oregon are protected. Effectively, the bill allows DAS to examine the state's risk at the time the transaction is negotiated. In particular, it allows the state to examine the financial wherewithal of the guarantor and to be satisfied that the guarantor is sufficiently creditworthy to protect the debt or bondholders. Other protections provided by the bill include the condition that the team will be legally obligated to stay in Portland during the term of the grant agreement. From biennium to biennium, the legislature is under no legal obligation to appropriate any money for disbursements under the grant agreements. However, the bill does say that the legislature intends to appropriate the incremental tax revenues. And it also says that once the money is appropriated, it cannot be taken back. If the guarantor fails to meet its obligations to debtor bondholders, the state is not legally or morally required to step in. Certainly, a future legislature could decide to step in, and there may be sound reasons to do so if that event occurs. This arguably is a risk. There is also some risk because House Bill 3606 provides that the amounts requested for appropriation will not be reduced even if Oregon's personal income tax is reduced. In other words, if the income tax rate drops below 8%, then the money would need to be appropriated from other sources to make up the difference. But this risk seems small because it assumes a reduction or restructure of our tax system that will decrease revenue rather than a restructure of the system that is at least revenue neutral. Although that does not seem likely, if it does occur, many other commitments, as well as some of our own bond issuances, would be affected, not just this proposed commitment. In sum, no deal is risk-free. But House Bill 3606 has been carefully crafted to allow the state to take part in the potential upside of this business venture while it mitigates the downside risk. The governor's office is satisfied that the risk to the state under House Bill 3606 is acceptable as balanced against the economic benefits baseball will bring to the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for these two? Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Our next panel is Kate Richardson and partner. Chuck Smith. And I would like to welcome Senator Rick Metzger, who is chair of the Economic Development and Transportation Committee, is here to join us this afternoon. And then we have two special guests, Kevin and Riley Edwards, no relation to the presidential candidate, I presume. Guys, right?
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chairs. For the record, Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff, State Treasurer's Office. And we are here not with actually formal testimony, more to be here as a resource for you on some of the technical issues and give you a little bit of background on how we got to this, that your staff is distributing also some proposed amendments, the Dash A3s, which are a culmination of the state parties involved in this bill, some recommended mostly technical amendments, and we anticipate in further review of these, since we did just receive these midday, that we may need to tweak those a little further. As you know, this bill was introduced originally with the state issuing bonds, and because of the environment in which the state finds itself at this time, and especially because of the appropriation bonds, $450 million of appropriation bonds that the state issued a couple months ago, the treasurer did not feel that was a proposal that he could support in any way, and actually that the state could perform without significantly affecting its credit. Thus, you see the iteration of this financial arrangement to become more of a grant situation where the state is removed from, as you heard from Ms. Satoff just a moment ago, that the state is not issuing any bonds. In fact, I'm not sure that the word bond even appears in this bill at any point. So this is a grant of tax revenues, and it is for specified purposes. Most of the meat or the details to the financial arrangement would be hammered out in a grant agreement, but there is a significant guidance for that grant agreement, and that is laid out in Section 2 of the bill, and the Dash A3 amendments do add an additional provision to that, which would be some specific dollar amounts in the form of a cap. The Treasurer does want to make clear that the on the appropriation portion of this, I think it is in Section 2.3, although you will hear that there's not a legal obligation to appropriate, you do indeed have an appropriation obligation here, and this would be a long-term commitment. This appropriation promise is analogous to the appropriation bond promise, the state's COP. When the Certificates of Participation Program, the appropriation promise there. So this is the same type of promise, and there would be consequences from the bond rating agencies and elsewhere should the state not fulfill that obligation to appropriate if the revenues are there. But as you will note in this bill, the requirement for the state to appropriate any revenues are only if those revenues exist. So if no income tax revenues are coming in because the team isn't playing or isn't here anymore, then there's no more obligation to appropriate after that. We're here to just answer any technical questions you may have about the financial arrangements, and also Department of Revenue is available for that too, since some of this is based on their work.
Manager.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kate, and again, I, like you, just got the amendment to look at, so I appreciate you walking through that, because I think it sounds like you've addressed the one of the issues that I had with this that I had yellow-lined, and that was the understanding, and Chuck, I know from our own time on the Debt Policy Advisory Committee that we truly do have a moral obligation, even though we may not have the full faith and credit there to appropriate that money. And as you know, we've been talking to in this body about reducing or making major changes to our tax system, going to a consumption tax or whatever. And if that were to happen, and we didn't have income tax, that the provisions are that our obligation would still be to appropriate that money, which would be general fund money as under the bill that is written now. And does that carry through in your amendment that amount of money would be still appropriated from the general fund, even if there was not an income tax that would be generating that? Does that change under your amendment at all?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Metzger, that does not change. That the what would be appropriated are income tax revenues received, and then as you heard Ms. Antoff articulate that if the income tax rate were changed, it would be calculated as if it were at the old rate. So there would be an incremental difference. So if the rate dropped to 6% on income tax, it would still be calculated at the higher rate.
Thank you. And if I could continue for a little bit, Madam Chair.
So then
the obligation of the state, DAS, would still be asking for appropriations, which would then clearly be general fund if, in fact, they weren't income taxes, to meet the obligation that was based on the initial price that was set when our tax system was different. So that would have to come from general fund money, correct?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Metzger. Yes, all this would be income tax money, and so the difference between the two would be presumably, although the legislature would have the authority to appropriate from any source.
And then one final question for you is: I'm just curious about bonding for this third party that would be the grantor and going into a bonding arrangement like this, in which you don't have the full faith and credit of the state behind it, in which there are these other possibilities that these would not be paid, and not to mention whether the value of the salaries actually would meet that debt service. But even if those were all true, because of that, I'm curious from either of you, from your expertise in Treasury, my biggest question is, who would buy these bonds? I mean, and what kind of a rate? I mean, would these be out in the junk bond market, essentially? I mean, they seem to be very high risk, and I just wondered, would they actually generate the total capital that is anticipated in this bill because of the risk that would be associated with repayment? I'm just wondering your professional opinion on that.
I'll answer one small part to it. Madam Co-Chair, Senator Metzger, because these bonds require a guarantor and the financing may or may not be based on this income stream, the state wouldn't, presumably there would be a guarantor and they would be able to sell them. But I, as far as what they may look like, I'll check it.
For the records, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chairs, I'm Chuck Smith, Director of Debt Management for the Oregon State Treasury. And Senator, it's difficult to comment on all the credit parts that could be brought to the table to enhance these kind of bonds enough to get acceptance in the marketplace. But certainly the guarantor would be an important credit part. There may be other streams or other revenues that could be pooled away from the state to enhance this. And then in addition, the state has an outstanding reputation on its appropriation credit. And I think a lot of people would be relying on the kind of track record that we've developed over the last 13 years in timely paying all the state's appropriation credits is looking to the state to actually pay to this third-party entity any income taxes that are collected. But they will have to do some creative thinking on bringing various pieces to the table in order to enhance this kind of transaction, I would guess, in order to get sort of an investment-grade kind of credit on it. And the guarantor is going to be an important party there.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. I just wanted to pursue the point, because we are in a period of considering tax reform options, just to make sure I'm really clear on this. This depends for funding on income tax revenues that wouldn't otherwise be there. In other words, players come, and for the games that they play, say you've got a really highly paid player who earns $50,000 a game, or I'm just pulling that out of the thin air, but say $50,000 a game, that's a pretty significant income tax hit of, you know, for the state at 9% on that income. But if we say we lowered the income tax rate to 5% and compensated for some kind of a consumption tax, be a sales tax or a value-added tax or whatever, some of those things are being discussed, it's very unlikely that the players in one day in town would buy enough things to provide that same level of income. So is it my correct understanding that if there were tax reform, that we would have to find another way of subsidizing, basically, our payments on these bonds?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Burdick, for the difference, yes, that is the risk that Ms. Adhoff highlighted, and that we also said that's a policy choice for the legislature to undertake. Presumably, there would be many of those choices in a tax reform situation.
So, as we consider tax reform, if to the extent that we're lowering our income taxes as part of a tax reform package to keep ourselves fiscally intact, we would have to commensurately raise the other tax ever so much higher to compensate for that amount of money that would be lost. Is that correct? To stay even?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Burdick, I think if I follow you theoretically, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions?
May I add one?
Sure.
We did the amendments before you do bring an additional measure of comfort for the treasurer to particularly with the cap aggregate and annual cap to this model here, and I will say that we have worked diligently to mitigate as many risks as possible to the state with this structure before you.
Thank you. Some of us might be curious as to what position the treasurer is taking on the bill, and if you don't know that, he can certainly let us know.
Madam Co-Chair, the treasurer is neutral on this bill, but his concerns have been allayed.
Okay. Thank you. Next panel, Ed Glad, Bob Shiprack. Can we squeeze Patrick Green up here as well? If he's not around, Jeff, come on up.
Go ahead.
Hi, welcome.
Can we start? Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Patrick Green with the Oregon AFL-CIO, and I'd like to join the rest of the panel here in support of House Bill 3606, and let me explain why. Every baseball team knows the importance of getting its leadoff hitter on base, and that's what House Bill 3606 does for the effort to bring Major League Baseball to Oregon. And it does so with no costs and with little risk for the state. We are tough-minded when it comes to tax subsidies. We don't want to see scarce tax revenues used to subsidize activities that the private sector can deliver without taxpayer assistance. But we are convinced that we need some coordinated public effort to get a Major League Stadium financed and built. And without this effort, we can't build it, and they won't come. This is a project we strongly support. It will bring a new vitality to the civic life and public spaces of Portland and generate economic activity and tax revenues that would otherwise be unavailable to Oregon. Also, it will mean new jobs, 1,500 family wage building trades jobs during the 3 years of its construction, and another 1,500 permanent part-time jobs thereafter. And these are the people have brought this up, the permanent part-time jobs of ticket takers and food service and cleaners and that sort of thing. And I just say that in other cities, for example, St. Louis, where I'm from, and Cleveland as well, those are good-paying union jobs, the part-time jobs with benefits. So this is not sort of like, in many ways, not the fast food part-time jobs, but we're able to get those to be good-paying family wage jobs. Also, I would say that this industry, baseball and sports in general, is an industry, and we're about attracting industry to Oregon. And we've spent time in other committees of this legislature rolling the dice on other industries that have nano and micro and bio in front of them, that in many ways are a roll of the dice. And in this case, baseball is a known industry. Sports is a known industry. And we know that it makes money, and we know that it's creates vitality in the cities and states where it exists. And I just say on the tax issue that this is tax increment financing. We already do this, only this time it's with the income tax. We think this is a creative way to minimize the costs and risks of raising capital for the project. And compared to other actions contemplated to lure business to Oregon with our tax dollars, we believe it's a lot better to capitalize future tax income revenues from high-income athletes who wouldn't otherwise perform in our state. We also know this will create jobs and create income tax from the jobs that it creates, from the construction workers who will be working on this project and from those workers who will work at the stadium. Bringing this project home won't be easy. This is a first step. The city of Portland will have to come up with a solution to funding that doesn't divert revenues from schools and local governments, and our unions in Portland, represented through the Northwest Oregon Labor Council, will want to be assured of a commitment to good jobs and staffing and maintaining the stadium. So this would be a free pass to first base. It gets us there at no cost to the state. And we urge you to vote yes on House Bill 3606 and send it to the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thanks.
For the record, my name is Ed Glad. I am a representative of the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. Currently, we are experiencing about 35% of our workforce throughout the state of Oregon as unemployed. Some of those people have been unemployed for up to 2 years. I thought that 2 months ago, when I made a tour of all of our unions throughout the state, that the further I got away from Portland, the opposition to a baseball stadium would grow. And I was reminded that wherever you build in the state of Oregon, our people will go to there. And I was reminded because one of my fellow carpenters from in the Roseburg area reminded me that when they built the Intel plant at Rondler Acres, that he camped in my yard for 6 months at a time. And I went to Klamath Falls, and I was shocked at a universal acceptance and encouragement to advocate for the baseball stadium in Bend, in Hermiston, in Medford, in Coos Bay, in Eugene, in Salem. Every place, I found no resistance to the idea that a baseball stadium would be a great way to create jobs, and that our people that are willing to travel to go to those jobs certainly were ready to pack up their trucks and move to Portland for the duration of the job. So we certainly do encourage you to take the step to begin the process for a baseball stadium to take shape. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Carlson. I represent 1,200 members of the International Association of Bridge Structural, Ornamental, and Reinforcing Ironworkers. I'm also here today on behalf of Bob Shiprock, representing the Oregon Building Trades. He had a conflict. We're here today in support of House Bill 3606. As it's been said many times today, the high unemployment rate amongst construction workers in Oregon is at 30 to 40%. It's above 30% for iron workers, and I think it's above 40% for some of the other crafts. So on average, we're right at the 40% mark. I know this legislature has extended unemployment benefits so far this session, and those were badly needed, but more importantly, this will create jobs that are needed. Families can't make it on unemployment. This 3606 will, combined with a handsome transportation package, is looking at a real bright future for construction in Oregon and jumpstart the economy. Anyway, we urge your support. if you let us be Bob the Builder, the athletes can play ball. So,
thanks.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Next panel, I have Julie Edwards. I'm sorry, David Kahn, Drew Mihalik, and Stephen Cantor. The list looks sort of like one of my law school papers.
Unreadable?
Right.
After I corrected it.
Touche.
Hi, Madam Co-Chair. My name is David Kahn, for the record. I'm the head of the Oregon Stadium Campaign, which is a unification of the private interests that have been involved in this baseball effort for actually a lot longer than I've been involved, namely the Oregon Sports Authority, the Portland Baseball Group, and the Portland Baseball Campaign. I actually am somewhat unusual today for two reasons. One is I've done this before. In November of 1995, I joined the Indiana Pacers basketball team, and one of my first tasks that I was handed by the president of the team was to see through the lobbying efforts for Conseco Fieldhouse. And I've been with the Pacers, and I'm still with the Pacers. This is my eighth season, and we saw Conseco Fieldhouse through the lobbying stage. In fact, I vividly remember a night, it's before the City County Council, much like we are here today, through the design and development, through the construction, through the marketing, through the groundbreaking, through the all the way up through opening night, and I'm proud to say that many people believe that Conseco Fieldhouse today is the world's finest sports arena. I'm also a little bit different because I'm not much of a baseball fan. I've really only watched about one inning this year, and although it was a good inning, it was last Saturday. I happened to be changing the channel, and Roger Clemens was pitching in pursuit of his 300th game, and I happened to be watching at the moment when he got pulled out of the game, and Juan Acevedo took over and gave up a home run on his first pitch, thereby foiling Roger Clemens' opportunity for the 300th game. So, like I said, it was a good inning.
And the Yankees got no hit last night for the first time in 6,000 games. There is a God.
I'm enough of a fan to have known that, too. So my background is twofold. One, I'm actually more of a basketball person, but I am a building person, having been through the whole process at Conseco Fieldhouse and with the Indiana Pacers. And I'm not much of a baseball fan, but the reason I'm doing this, the reason that I'm heading up this campaign, is because it's the right thing. It's the right thing right now for Oregon. It's the right thing for the city of Portland. It's the right thing for the building trades and the construction industry. It's the right thing for the business community. It's the right thing for the people of Oregon. In fact, I do want to point out before I forget, there have been actually two polls that haven't been very well publicized, but as recently as 2 days ago, KGW.com did a poll asking people to vote whether they thought bringing Major League Baseball to Portland and Oregon was a good thing. 56% of the respondents said it was a good thing, and only 40% said no. That mirrored almost to a T a poll that Grove Insight did for us 2 months before that, where the results were almost, you know, eerily similar. 56% said yes, bringing Major League Baseball to Portland and Oregon was a good thing, and I thought that it was remarkable poll result, given the economic and political climate that's already been touched upon here today. We all recognize that there are many serious issues that are facing Oregonians and Portlanders, but I think that we've managed to persuade folks that, if anything, this is the perfect time to be undertaking a project like this. I do want to show a couple of things. May I stand up, Madam Co-Chair?
Sure.
But it can see the field house, which is the project that I'm most aware of because I was involved. 97 total contracts were awarded to the construction industry. Of those 97 contracts, 68 went to Indiana companies, about 70%. Because I realize that one issue that has popped up from time to time is how can we make sure this is Oregon work? This will be Oregon work. Every building is like this, and you can imagine the worst possible thing that any developer could do would be to have a situation where you're not inviting the local populace to join in. Immediately, you're trying to build goodwill if you're a new team relocating to a market. At the Rose Garden, which is the most substantial facility, sports facility project that's been done in Portland, Oregon, they set some remarkable goals for minority contracts, contracts for women-owned businesses, and contracts for small emerging businesses, and those were gender-neutral small emerging businesses. They hope to get 25% of the contract paid to those types of businesses. Instead, they surpassed that. They got 33% of those contracts went to minorities, women, and small emerging businesses. Also, 50% of the new hires for the Rose Garden several years ago came from the city of Portland, and I believe 28% of them came from the northeast side as part of an agreement that was done then. And then finally, up in Seattle, which is the most recent baseball stadium that has been done in our region, $80 million in contracts were awarded to minority-owned, women-owned, and emerging small businesses. I think that's one thing that hasn't been talked about yet today that is fairly significant, and that is these projects not only help the construction industry, but they also help those who are very much in need. So this campaign is about jobs. We've done, I think, a very good job of not overselling the economic underpinnings of bringing Major League Baseball to Portland and Oregon. By that I mean, I know that there are some lawmakers who have perhaps read just enough economic literature on sports to be dangerous. There's a lot of theories out there, some of which are quite right, that there's a tendency to paint sports facilities as a way for all of a sudden dollars will be falling from the sky. That's not the case. But what is the case is they can be an important spur to economic development and activity, and they also miss the point that we have a very peculiar set of facts here in Portland and Oregon in that we're a border city, which isn't the case, by the way, when in Indianapolis and Indiana where we were smack dab in the middle of the state. In this case, as you can see from this chart, the Trailblazers do about 15% of their business, 15% from Southwest Washington. If you assume that a baseball team will draw 2.4 million people per annum, per season, and 15% of that ticket-buying populace will come from Southwest Washington, that means that 360,000 people will be coming in a six-month period across the bridges when they otherwise would not. In other words, if somebody wants to go to movies in Vancouver, Washington right now, they can see a movie in Vancouver, Washington. What they can't do is attend a Major League Baseball game. If a facility was built in the city of Portland, we will be dragging traffic from Washington into the state, into the city, when otherwise it would not come. It's not a redistribution, therefore, of dollars, as so many senators have apparently said in public comments. One other point I'd like to make, and that is that we need to stop the flow of dollars that is leaving the state right now in droves. The Mariners tell us that about 15 to 20% of their ticket base is coming from south of the border. I think that's high. But if you even look at it conservatively and assume that it's 10%, and knowing now that the Mariners now draw 3 million fans per season, if you take 10% of 3 million, that's 300,000 Oregonians who are leaving the state in a six-month period, principally in the summertime months when there are families, and are spending their dollars in the state of Washington when otherwise they'd be spending them in Oregon. And mind you, they're not necessarily spending them just at the ballpark, although surely they are. They're spending them at the hotels, the restaurants, the bars, the taverns, the gas stations, you name it. Oftentimes spending, you know, time for a whole weekend and a whole weekend series. So it's critically important for this city and this state right now to stop that flow of dollars that are leaving the state. So if you look at just those two numbers there, 360,000 visitors coming into the state and 300,000 or so visitors no longer leaving the state, 660,000 people is an astronomical number and would rank almost at the top of Oregon's attractions list in terms of attendance. And that's just the people who would be coming in and no longer leaving. Remember, we're talking about 2.4 million people that would, on an estimated basis, attend to watch this team play. There's also a tremendous benefit to tourism due to this bill. Baseball is different than basketball, and it's different from football from that standpoint. You know, when the Rose Garden is televised and the Blazers are playing in front of a national TV audience, there are no beauty shots showing Mount Hood in downtown Portland. Baseball, by its nature, is played predominantly in the summertime. It's an outdoor sport. It's an unbelievable opportunity for Portland and Oregon to market itself to the national populace with those kinds of shots that can be seen on ESPN, Fox, and other local and national carriers that routinely televise baseball games. The governor has said, from what I understand, that Oregon should own the summertime. Well, this should be a very key component of owning the summertime for the tourism industry in Portland and Oregon. One other thing I would also like to point out is that there's been a lot of folks who have suggested, not just, you know, down here in Salem, but elsewhere, that with the other problems that have been bedeviling Oregon of late, namely education, that this isn't the right time to be doing this. I think, as I said earlier, just the opposite. This is the perfect time to be doing this. It's the perfect time for the state and the city to be thinking of ways to remedy those problems. The Bring Major League Education to Oregon folks have joined forces with us. They've decided that this is something that they do want to partner with, and I'll just want to read one paragraph from a letter that Carl Mundorf, the head of the Major League Education Oregon group, wrote just this week, and I think you should have a copy of this in front of you. If not, we'll leave one for you. Major League Baseball would provide an economic stimulus to Portland and the surrounding communities by immediately creating jobs in the hard-hit construction industry and by the economic impact of a major construction project that a new stadium would provide. Portland and the state deserve Major League economic opportunity and a viable economic future. And one of the things that I've often said in front of groups through these last several months is this. If we stop pursuing Major League Baseball today, would any of these other problems go away tomorrow? PERS? Education? If, however, we continue to pursue this under the right circumstances and under the right system and with the kinds of protections and safeguards that are embedded in this bill, is it possible that there could be a small amount of economic recovery and stimulus because of baseball? I think the answer is fairly obvious. Thank you.
Hi, Chair Brown and members of the Rules Committee. I'm Drew Mihalik, CEO of the Oregon Sports Authority. Our organization recently became a statewide organization because of our expanding mission throughout the state, securing major sports events in Bend, Eugene, and Salem. The campaign to bring Major League Baseball to Oregon is also a statewide agenda as we seek to provide all Oregonians with access to our nation's pastime. Earlier this afternoon, we found out that Portland and Oregon have come of age in the sports industry. We just announced in an unprecedented announcement that the Women's World Cup is coming to Portland later this summer. This has never happened before, in that Portland is the only city in the history of the World Cup to have successive World Cup events. It's a signal that Portland and Oregon is ready for big-time sports. In our conversations with all Oregonians, we've noticed an overwhelming support and business support for the Major League Baseball campaign. over 580 Oregon corporations, large and small, have publicly endorsed this campaign, and there's a collective understanding among Oregonians that baseball is good for jobs. It will bring construction jobs and provide a meaningful economic boost to our economy at a time when a boost is needed. It will also, as David said, increase tourism and be a significant addition to our cultural landscape. So on behalf of over 580 corporations that have endorsed the campaign and the 130 corporate members of the Oregon Sports Authority, we urge you to look favorably upon House Bill 3606. Thank you.
Thanks.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Metzger, let me start just by saying how wonderful the process has been to develop this bill. We are all involved in nonprofit groups. I am Steve Cantor. I'm a law professor. I'm president of the Portland Baseball Group, a member of the board and executive committee of the Oregon Stadium Campaign, the coalition that's leading this effort that David and Drew have already talked about. We've had a wonderful collaborative relationship with Legislative Council, Department of Revenue, Treasurer's Office, Governor's Office, Bond Council, Harvey Rogers, who does much work for the state, Solomon Smith Barney, the bond folks that are very knowledgeable up in Seattle, and Major League Baseball. And one of the unique aspects of our effort is that none of us are employed for this effort. We are all volunteers. We are all working for nonprofits. We are looking out to do this right, to do this for Oregon, not for an ownership group, not for anything else. To do it right means it has to be good for Oregon, has to be good for Portland, has to be good for an ownership group. And we believe this bill is carefully constructed to do that. So I want to thank all those people for all the great work, the many late nights that they've put in, including last night, to get these Dash 3 amendments to you. I also want to thank Senator Len Hannon genuinely. Senator Hannon, as you know, has been an opponent, at least of previous versions of this bill. I've got enormous respect, and our group has enormous respect for the many good things he's done for this state. And candidly, his objections to the earlier bill were well-founded. And I hope that he will understand that whether he's an opponent or not at the end of the day, that he deserves a good deal of credit for having helped get us to a bill that really is sound, that reduces the state's risk virtually to zero, to a very acceptable level, and improves the prospects of us getting to the end. I want to take just a break in my testimony to respond to excellent questions from Senators Metzger and Burdick, because I think they're very important points, and make a comment there. The first one is, everyone is correct that there is a provision in the bill that if the tax system materially changes, the bill provides the mechanism for how you calculate what happens then. None of us know how the tax system might change or whether it will change. But I want to reassure the committee and the legislature that this is not a significant risk to the state for the following number of reasons. First, even if we sharply reduce our income tax and have other taxes, the odds are that for people making in the millions of dollars, the reduction in the top marginal rate will be less than it might be at other levels. I don't see why we would sharply reduce the rate for people at making an average of $2 or $3 million, which is baseball players. Secondly, and even more importantly, as the governor's legal counsel said, surely any sensible tax change will be at least tax neutral or tax positive, tax revenue enhancing, with perhaps some sort of consumption tax replacing part of it, something like that. If we do that, as David pointed out, baseball, more than anything else, will be bringing people from out of state. Those are new visitors to our state who not only come for the baseball game, but will go to Crater Lake and the coast and hotels and motels. And they will be paying, if there is a consumption tax, consumption taxes probably way in excess of whatever marginal income tax might not be there. So overall, the state will be better off if we happen to have a sensible tax reform. We'll get more money from baseball. It's just that we don't know what that change will be right now, and so the measurement remains the same. The third thing is that, of course, it is very uncertain whether Oregon will ever have a sales tax or not. As we know, politically, that's a difficult issue. But I think you should be reassured that even if the income tax is reduced, as long as Oregon has a sensible tax structure, it will do even better. That's the only reason we would do a tax change, and that should be understood. Secondly, Senator Metzger asked quite appropriately, who would buy these bonds? Obviously, that's an important question. We could pass this bill, and at the end of the day, if there isn't a deal that is good enough for bondholders and for an ownership in Major League Baseball, we won't end up with a team. But you know what? Nothing will be lost. This bill is so careful, it says the state does not pay a penny until and unless there is a deal. It even provides that the cost of negotiating the grant agreement is not provided by the state, but is provided by the outside beneficiaries, the grantee and the team owner. So there is no risk to the state. You're asking an important hypothetical question. Can we, in the end, put together a real deal that is good for everybody? And as David said, that's going to be a difficult task, but it is doable. We've worked very closely with Major League Baseball. They would not still be pursuing us if they didn't think this could be done. We've worked very closely with Bond Counsel and with Solomon Smith Barney on the bonds, with the treasurer's office. You know, we won't know till we actually get there, but let's keep that possibility alive and not shy away from it.
Steve, can I jump in with a couple other questions? The Dash A3 amendments, and I don't know if you've seen them, limit the aggregate payments to $150 million. Yeah. I'm just guessing, I'm assuming a baseball stadium costs more than that, and what are plans for financing the remainder? And then the other question is, I'll let you answer that one, and then I'll look for my other one.
Yes, Co-Chair Brown, members of the committee, that's correct. We have always assumed that the state's participation should only be a portion. General estimates of the overall project cost are something like $350 million. We have quite accurate information from HOK Architects, the premier baseball architects in the country. Turner Construction has done a lot of costing out for them. We've got really good numbers on that. We don't think the state should pay more than half. In fact, this is substantially less than half. Other revenues, other monies will come directly and indirectly from the locality in similar ways. In the same way that we're committed not to take a single dollar of general tax revenue at the state or a dollar from education or health care or public safety, we will have the same principles at the local level. And we will ensure that their funding mechanisms, David's been working very closely with the city and other local governments to begin to work on that with Major League Baseball. And, of course, this will be a public-private partnership. There will be private money in this, too. When you look at the whole picture, the ownership group is going to have to decide to put in substantial capital. They will have to buy the team, capitalize the team, and directly or indirectly put in substantial money into the stadium. And they will be prepared to do that, assuming it's a fair deal. Baseball also has a very sound principle, which requires ownerships not to be overly leveraged, to have a 60% equity, no more than 40% debt. That ensures that you will have a well-capitalized ownership group that will not be fly-by-night. Baseball is going to be very careful. They have tried very hard to be loyal to their communities. They've not moved a team in 32 years. If they make the move to Portland, they're going to be here for a long-term marriage, not a fly-in and fly-out. So I think we should be reassured about that. And we've intentionally limited the state's exposure and commitment because we think this should be a shared partnership, state, local, and private.
Okay. And then the other question I had, there was an article in the Washington Post on Sunday, it looks like June 8th, looking like the D.C. financing proposal is in trouble. And apparently one of the issues is the tax on baseball players and the union opposing that. Could you address that?
Yes, legal. Excuse me, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. Legally, these two proposals are completely distinct.
Okay.
What D.C. is proposing is what is called a jock tax. That means they will impose a separate tax, a new tax, on athletes alone. And, of course, this violates the Dormant Commerce—well, they're not a state, so it only goes to federal stuff, but it probably violates Dormant Commerce Clause. If they were a state, it would violate the Equal Protection Clause and perhaps the Privileges and Immunities Clause. We are not doing that. All we are saying is that the Oregon tax system applies to everybody, including baseball players, home players, and visiting players who play here. This is routine around the country. California recognizes this as such a good source of income. They have a full-time person in their tax department who tracks visiting athletes to make sure they're paying. Our bill puts in it a withholding requirement, so we don't have to run them down. Each team that comes here and plays will submit to the state a check and a list of everybody that plays here and their pro rata share. That is fine with the players' union. It is fine with Major League Baseball. It's done routinely. There are uniform tax rules for taxing visiting players. And ours does not raise any of the legal questions. And, in fact, the players' union has been very cooperative in our approach and is worried about at least what the public proposal was in Washington, D.C. But we're not trying to compete with D.C. or Northern Virginia. As it was said earlier, if we do this right and get proper public-private partnership on stadium financing, we believe that we will get a team that will be successful, because baseball is going to move at least two teams. So even if they someday put one in D.C., Northern Virginia, there'll be one for us. And by the way, we're very much hoping and thinking it could be the Montreal Expos, and if they are, then our team just beat the Seattle Mariners two games in a row. It's a good start for the rivalry.
Any further questions? Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Steve, I was kind of hoping and had this great idea that our college might be able to be the guarantor, but they just lost $10 million. So we'll have to come up with another way to do that. I have a few questions, and whoever wants to answer these, feel free to land in if I could ask a few, because I think they're important ones to see how we're going with this. If this stadium were to be built, and the various partners who come together to build the stadium, who would own the stadium and the underlying property?
The expectation is it will be a publicly owned stadium. It will be a publicly owned facility leased to the team. Obviously, this will be part of the overall agreement, the overall deal, but that is the clear expectation.
And the I noticed in the bill, I don't see any changes in the proposed amendment, but in Section 2, it provides that the granted amounts may be used only to pay for the cost of financing, developing, constructing, and furnishing of a major league stadium. In developments this large, and certainly the Rose Garden, Rose Quarter were an example of this, there's other costs besides the stadium, because this would require probably some significant transportation infrastructure. How would those costs be paid?
Well, the state portion, of course, is capped, and the cost of the stadium itself far exceeds the portion that the state would be putting in, so that does not create a problem. The overall deal, of course, includes many other things, as I said, including purchasing and capitalizing the team. There could be development properties around it, but the state's portion, it's well under the amount for construction of the stadium.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just wondering, who would be paying the transportation infrastructure? Are they going to be tax dollars from the city of Portland's taxpayers, or from Multnomah County's, or is the team going to pay that, or will those be other infrastructure costs that would be asked just because it creates congestion, and then ask the Department of Transportation to pay for those costs?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Metzger, no, as I said, there will be an overall project budget. We believe that will be approximately $350 million. It's still, obviously, there are details.
And that covers the infrastructure as part of that.
And there may be some variance for that. But obviously, at the end of the day, the entire project has to be covered. And our principle consistently has been, we will not take a single dollar of general revenue that is not related to baseball and the benefits from baseball. So there's no hidden general tax that would be inappropriate. There may be things. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can happen in the deal. But for example, I'm not talking about baseball. But if you had a parking garage that was off-site, separate somewhere, that was a revenue generator, that might be self-funded by itself, something like that. But David may have a comment or two about this as well.
I just want to reiterate, Senator Metzger, having done this before, I know where you're going. There aren't going to be any hidden costs. There'll be a project budget based on a site that, of course, has not been selected yet. Until we have a site selected, in terms of land acquisition costs, environmental remediation, infrastructure that you're talking about, some roads that may have to be changed, those things will be added to the project budget, as Steve mentioned. There won't be an opportunity to have to then look for more money to do all those things. We'll have everything
gathered together en masse, and that'll be the nut that we'll have to cover. In Indianapolis, we did abide by that, meaning we were able to say with a straight face, anybody who did not want this thing didn't have to pay $1 for it. And that's exactly the road that we've been traveling for the last several months here, both with this bill and in the work that we've been doing, as you mentioned, Madam Co-Chair, with the city on their pieces. That same mandate, self-imposed, has been abided by throughout. There's no way this works if there's any property tax increases or any income tax increases. It's all going to be covered as part of the project budget and the financing that's business-related to baseball.
And just one more little reassurance. HOK Architects have built 12 straight successful Major League Baseball parks, starting with Camden Yards in Baltimore. Everyone has been on budget and on time.
Two other questions I could ask.
Fire away.
First one is regarding the team. There is a provision in the bill in Section 3 that it says a Major League Baseball franchise has agreed to locate and be based in Portland, has entered into a legally binding commitment to remain in Portland for at least the term of the grant agreement. I know baseball is still discussing the proper size of Major League Baseball and may even be considering still reducing the number of teams. So what would be the impact if they've located in Portland but baseball downsized and the team just disappears? They didn't relocate out of Portland, but they decided to operate with 28 teams or something different. What would be the impact on that and the fact that baseball is still considering perhaps downsizing? You know, what risk does the city have with a alien franchise that might be located here?
Well, let me back up a bit because I think you've touched upon an important point, Senator Metzger. Baseball does have the right, but not until 2006, as part of the most recently negotiated collective bargaining agreement with the players, to contract teams. Although even that's a little bit fuzzy, in that I think what's been left on the table is the right to just talk about it, not necessarily do it. That's why this timing is so critical for our city and our state. This legislature, as you know, doesn't meet again until January 2005 after this session.
Don't count on it.
Exactly.
If we finish by then.
As long as it's favorable for this bill, then we'll take that opportunity. But we're going to have to... Major League Baseball was in Portland as recently as Tuesday with three staff officials. They very badly want to move this one team right now, relocate it, because they own it. Baseball bought the Expos. They need to dispose of it. As we're all aware, and as your question indicated, there's at least three or four other franchises that are ailing and are either ailing because they cannot get a stadium financed and funded in their own home city or because their market simply isn't supporting them, mostly because they're oversaturated as opposed to being undersaturated, which we are, with only one pro sports team for a population that's 22nd in America. I do not believe it's possible or even conceivable that a team could come to Portland and then quickly disappear, because the leases that will be entered into are going to be ironclad and tied to these debt payments. I know that issue has come up from time to time. It's the same kind of lease that we have in Indiana with Conseco Fieldhouse. The earliest that we can leave is in year 11, and only in year 11 do we begin paying huge penalties that will be matched up to the debt payments from years 11 through 20. It's really only until year 21, when the debt is finally retired, that we have any flexibility whatsoever to move. And just one aside, one of the most ailing franchises in baseball right now are the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. They're in an oversaturated market, playing in a dome stadium in the heat and humidity of Florida. I hope there's no baseball officials here, but it probably wasn't the brightest move to make. That franchise is not believed to be a candidate for contraction because they have a lease that runs for another 26 years. So baseball, in making those determinations, is going to be looking at the lease terms that these teams do have with their cities and their municipalities and localities before deciding that they can just willy-nilly move a team.
Just one final question then,
okay,
for this group.
And then we're going to get rid of this panel so we can move on to the next panel.
The your display using, for example, the Rose Garden and others about the impact, potential impact for small businesses and women-owned businesses is very good. Of course, Mr. Allen provided most of the funds for that himself, so he could set those types of goals. You know, it is not unusual. We have a number of pieces of legislation that we pass. In fact, I've done a few in economic development this year with OECDD that have specific requirements in the legislation requiring allocation to percentages of women-owned businesses or minority-owned businesses. Would this, since you're touting it as a possibility, but there's no requirement that that be done, that some language to be included that would give some reassurance that there would be emphasis placed on small businesses in the state and emerging businesses that could participate. Would that be something that would be welcomed by the group?
I can't speak for the city, but I can tell you in discussions with them that have gone on for months, that's always been the understanding and the intention that the city would have. And since the city ultimately will be both the landlord and being in all likelihood the entity that enters into those kinds of documents and arrangements, I think the answer is without a doubt, Senator Metzger.
And I'll just make a concluding comment. I appreciate your patience. I do want to say one other thing. A number of senators around the building have raised the question, is there any chance the state is going to end up as the guarantor? The answer is no. If a team were to leave, if there were a catastrophic failure, the state would not pay. If there were a strike, the state would not pay. If the income tax revenues come in less than projected, the state does not pay. And one other bit of reassurance, throughout the entire history of Major League Baseball, including the Great Depression, they've done a lot of things wrong, which is why we have this opportunity. But they have never defaulted on a financial legal obligation. I think that this is a marriage that could be very good for Portland. What we have said all along is we're interested not in building it and they will come, not a fantasy like that. It's prepare the way so that if they come, we will build it. We are committed to doing Major League Baseball done right, and we believe that if it is done right, it will be good for everybody, will be an enormous community building asset, and a potential part of the puzzle in getting Oregon moving again. Thank you very much.
Senator Corcoran, you have one.
Yeah, I understand. I've heard this over and over again. The state will not pay, but when I ask the question, who is the final guarantor? I don't get an answer. I get this circular kind of confused discussion about, well, you know, it can't happen until a team decides to move here. It can't happen until we have a stadium deal. So I'm trying to think of the transaction. So you have to come to the state to get the money, the mechanism for a fund by the treasurer's office to bring the income tax dollars in to pay the bonds. But what I'm really having trouble with is trying to imagine, if it's not the state of Oregon, if the Oregon's not on for one stinking dime, then who is? Who is on the, responsible ultimately? And a sort of an additional question to that is, could the city of Portland be?
Again, Senator Corcoran, I can't speak for the city of Portland, but I can pretty much assure you they won't be either, and they've been very clear about that, just as the state has. But I think that ideally, first of all, let's not get too negative already that the debt payments won't be made. In other words, the numbers that are being run...
That's not my question, though. I'm not really concerned.
But I want to make certain that is said, because I think that people already, you know, jump to the conclusion, you know, what if? And I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, but let's say it does. You're absolutely right. This bill, as I said in the House hearing, tables that issue. In other words, what it says is, we're going to first get this revenue stream dedicated. These state income taxes will be dedicated as a revenue stream. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're absolutely right. We need to go out and identify that entity, that operation, that individual who will be the ultimate backstop, and also we will need a financial institution in between there as a further prophylactic. But I do believe this, that if we get this bill passed, the sufficient momentum will have been created to identify that guarantor. You can imagine how difficult it is in this environment, when there isn't even a bill passed yet, to have a very substantive meeting and discussion about guaranteeing something that hasn't been passed yet. I believe, you know, to the bottom of my heart, that getting one is going to be, I wouldn't say easy, but it's going to be a lot less challenging in that environment with a bill that's passed, as opposed to an environment where a bill is very much still in play.
Well, just to follow up on that, is that our
answer? Sure.
When you when you were involved in Canseco, how was that financed?
Well, first of all, Canseco's the baseball player. We were Canseco, the insurance company. But I understand completely how
baseball... this bill or not.
I can understand how the baseball could have invaded your life. We did a mixture of financing just like...
He's the one that had the ball bounce off his head. Yeah.
I'll defer to the baseball fans in the audience for... Okay, thank you, Harvey. I could hear you back there. We did a mixture of most of these deals. I'm not just familiar. I'm obviously have a history with one, but I'm familiar with a ton of them. And they're all done, as Steve kind of touched upon, public-private partnership with almost rare exception, meaning a mixture of state money, a mixture of city or local money, and a mixture of owner or private money.
But in this case, you're saying there is no state money.
No, I think that somebody could conceptualize it as that the state money is the dedicated revenue stream that is being funneled by the state agency. But certainly when you look at it, you know, in a pragmatic standpoint, you're right. It's money that isn't here today. It isn't state money. It's money that would only be here but for a stadium and a team. So that, to me, is one of the beauties of this arrangement. Of all the ones that I've ever been privy to, including the one that I've been involved in, this is by far the most creative, the most sensible, and the safest one that I've ever come across in terms of protecting the state and its citizens.
I guess what I'm just still really stuck on is trying to... Somebody's going to have to walk me through the mechanics because I'm just a labor goon. I want to know why... or how that relationship, who the partners are in that relationship. If all we're doing is setting up the revenue stream to come in with money that we wouldn't have otherwise, I understand all that. What I want to understand is who is the receiving end of that, and what does that look like in terms of any potential liability for the state or for the city?
The best way to describe it, the way I think of it, this is an escrow deal where everybody conditionally puts their part on the table. It only gets triggered if everything is there. Okay, so it's critical that the state dedicate this revenue stream. There will be other revenue streams dedicated from the local level. There will be an ownership group that dedicates. At that point, when you've got all these revenue streams and the assurance of them, that's when the guarantor will be comfortable. And when the bond market will be comfortable. Ultimately, the question is, can these bonds be sold, the ultimate bonds, by the entity that's selling them? The bond people, the finance people so far are telling us this is a first responsible step toward doing that. This isn't the end of the day, but this is the first piece of the escrow deal with the state not taking the risk. You will have an entity that issues the bonds. It could ultimately be a stadium authority. It could be an economic development entity, as the state or and the city both do on other projects without encumbering the state or the city's credit rating or financial problems. So it really is an escrow deal. All we're saying is, let's do this in an Oregon way, prudently. Let's not throw money out there until we're sure it's really going to work. But let's put this on the table so we can get the other pieces of the puzzle worked out. We believe we can do that, and I don't believe Major League Baseball would be spending the time with us. They're well aware of the details of this bill if they didn't think that this was doable. They are aware of the bill. They've been meeting with us. Obviously, we are one of the top areas they are looking at for lots of reasons. This can be done under the conditions of this bill, and it may or may not be eventually. Depends on all the ultimate circumstances and the due diligence that an ownership group will do. But we believe that this is sufficient for the state portion of this, and that this will make a good deal for everybody.
And finally, what was the team name of the last team to play in Washington, D.C.?
Uh-oh. Harvey knows that. And we've got another panel. But I want to just say one thing on behalf of somebody who couldn't be here, because I must do this, if I could. Roberta Kennedy. Roberta is 93 years young. When the hearing was scheduled for the 19th, she was planning on being here. Her grandson, Sam, works at a high level with the Boston Red Sox and is about to have her great-grandchild. He's in Boston. She's here. She lives on Terwilliger Boulevard. Roberta asked me to tell you, she has watched every baseball game that's been in Portland for her 93 years. She's lived here 93 years. She knows everything about baseball. She wants baseball here, and she particularly wants to be sure that her new great-grandchild, who is coming, coming has an opportunity to come visit her here and see a game before she, the next 20 years or so before she dies. So we need your support.
Thank you. Okay, next up, Julie Edwards, Carl Flipper, and Jay Waldron,
yes,
and then on deck, Kim Kimbrough and Chair Olney Pat. I do not say, is Roy J. here? Okay.
I will keep this very short.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Senator Metzger, my name is Carl Flipper. I am co-chair of the Community Development Committee for the Portland Baseball Group. In private life, I'm a director of the Humboldt Neighborhood Association, a Northeast Portland Neighborhood Association, and I'm a community and economic development practitioner. I'm going to shorten my presentation to just talk about the community development aspects of Major League Baseball. I've tried to get into the hands of most of you a copy of a report from Major League Baseball that details its remarkable record in support of K-12 education, programs for children and families, youth, healthy lifestyles, humanitarian efforts, women and diversity. They have a fabulous minority and women contracting program, volunteerism, and community contributions. Not only did we get information from Major League Baseball, but our committee over the last 6 or 7 months has been questioning different franchises and communities around the country as to whether or not the franchises themselves have been puffing in the activities that they have been doing in the communities. And by and large, the franchises have been honest with us and with their communities, and they have been doing programs that have been making a real impact in not only the cities, but in the regions where the Major League franchises are located. So I'll end with that. Thank you.
Hi. Co-Chair Brown and members of the committee. My name is Julie Edwards. I'm a resident of Westland, Oregon, outside of Portland. Grew up in Salem. And I'm here for you today, in front of you today, fully and strongly supporting House Bill 3606. I'm here on three different levels, frankly. One as a female. Women love baseball, too. I think this is just goes beyond the traditional white male businessman. I look at the faces at the Mariners games, and it's equally balanced with women and minorities. And I think it's a sport that a lot of people can really enjoy in this town, in Oregon. Secondly, I'm here as a business professional. I worked with Major League Baseball in the early 90s, most specifically with the expansion teams, notably the Colorado Rockies and the Florida Marlins. I also worked on new stadium development with the Cleveland Indians, the Jacobs Field, and Camden Yards. So I saw firsthand, truly, the benefits of bringing baseball into town. And I think this is very, you know, if history repeats itself, this is very... I see the same kind of thing happening here as I did in other towns. There's a lot of skepticism and uncertainty at the beginning, but once that tidal wave crosses and people understand the value of it's going beyond the economic impact and the quality life aspect, what brings to Oregon, what Oregonians need right now is a real good feeling about the state. I think you will see a complete turn of events happening, and a lot of people will be supporting this very strongly. And quite frankly, I also come here, most importantly, as a parent. I'm a mother of two small children in the public schools. They're right over here in the room. Thank you, Co-Chair Brown, for acknowledging them. And they're also involved in the Little League programs. And I can say to you that I was a first, I guess, non-believer at the beginning, thinking, why would anybody vote for this if it's taking away from education dollars? Now all of the parents and friends that I see are saying, why wouldn't we vote for this? Because it really can bring not only the economic vitality to this town, which we need, but the quality of life aspect goes far beyond that, I feel, as a parent. I think I grew up in Oregon going to parks. This is a different kind of park. It's still green, You can bring your kids and your family there. You can enjoy the day. But it I think it brings an aspect that we often don't think about. It brings a hometown heroes that my kids could look up to and have business cards, not business cards, baseball cards that they could have, perhaps the Portland Expos or what have you. People who have good reputations in this town that kids could have role models, positive role models in. And I also think it brings a sense of affordability. I'm a single mother. I could not really afford to be going to the Blazer games, although I love them. I think it allows me to bring my children to a game. There's more games, so there's more opportunities for me to take them. And I think I represent a lot of the single parents as well as parents in general. So I would urge all of you to please step up to the plate and support House Bill 3606. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Jay, fire
Thank
away.
You. I'll be brief, which is probably the biggest false statement lawyers ever make. I'll address briefly with a couple of questions. Tourism, jobs and economic development, and quality of life. My name is Jay Waldron. I'm a Portland attorney and rabid baseball fan. I'm also the chair of the Port of Portland and have been the chair of North Clackamas School Board and founded a substantial educational foundation. Tourism. We spent so much time at the port trying to get Lufthansa here, and I think it's been a real economic shot in the arm. I know from statistics, for example, Denver, 10% of the people that go to Denver games for the Rockies, Colorado Rockies, are tourists. That's a substantial number of people. You're talking about perhaps 250,000 tourists that would go to a Portland baseball game. The second thing on tourism, I think about how much money you're going to spend in this biennium trying to stimulate tourism as a major industry in this state. I think that the professionals in tourism would tell you that four shots of Mount Hood in August are certainly worth $5 million. So I just want you to think about that for a moment, the impact of that. There are many people in my family back east who have never forgotten the shot of Mount Hood in the 1977 when Portland was in the finals. That would be a common occurrence, and I can't imagine any better expenditure of tourism dollars, and that would be essentially free. Dave Zelke, who is the chair of the Oregon Tourism Commission, asked me to read a statement. I'll summarize it. He is the chair of the Oregon Tourism Commission, cannot be here today because he is in Los Angeles talking about an international airline for nonstop service to PDX. He stated that the Tourism Commission is highly supportive of the efforts to attract Major League Baseball to Oregon. Baseball would provide our state a world-class attraction that will create jobs, visitor spending throughout the state, and help create awareness domestically and internationally that Oregon is a great place to visit. My comment on that regard, too, is how much it would help the port for a flight to Japan. If we had a Major League Baseball team, you see the benefits that have come to Seattle. The second issue on jobs, I want to do something just briefly a little bit different. And I'm not going to talk about the construction jobs or even the part-time jobs. What if I told you I could bring a business to Oregon that employs 30 millionaires that don't use any services and just spend money? Because that's the way I would describe them. But it also brings downtown 200 white-collar workers that earn between $50,000 and $800,000 a year. That's the front office of a baseball team. This would be a whole different discussion if I said there was a green, non-polluting industry that was going to come to downtown Portland with that type of an income. And let me switch to, finally, to quality of life. Portland, how much money have we spent, Senator Burdick and Senator Brown, just thinking from, and Senator Metzger from a Portland perspective, probably how much have we spent in terms of perhaps $1 billion or more to improve the quality of life in downtown Portland through the various amenities in order to have 10, 20, 30,000 people downtown at night? It's what's constantly remarked about when I have expert witnesses or clients from out of town, that Portland lives at night. What if I told you then we could bring 25,000 people downtown 100 nights a year for nothing in the sense of the way we're financing this? I mean, we spent 10, 15 years trying to get that number of people downtown, and we could do it like that. My other comment is, we talk so much about the split between east and west and north and south in Oregon. Denver, Kansas City, other franchises that are located like Portland within the state have 30 to 40% of their fan base from out of the metropolitan or suburban area. You're talking about 700,000 or 800,000 Oregonians from outside of Portland interacting in Portland every year that perhaps don't do so now. I couldn't, if that was a proposal and we had a free way to get 700,000 people back and forth in Portland, people would think that was a pretty creative idea. And then finally, in that regard, I just want to end up with Cincinnati. Cincinnati is about our size. They have a perfectly workable stadium. But because of the stimulus to the economy, because of the jobs, because of the stimulus to downtown, they elected, at our size, to build a brand new stadium because of the benefits they saw from it. And Ohio, believe me, I've read the press, is in the same economic situation as the state of Oregon. And it's just the values that they feel. I think we need a victory. Just like Lufthansa was a big stimulus in this state, or Mexicana, probably far beyond the actual dollars. I think the idea of showing that we can jumpstart the economy with 1,500 construction jobs in the very near future, I don't know of anything else that is before the legislature that would have that kind of instant effect on the economy. Thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate you being here. Kim Kimbrough, Chair Olney Pat. Harvey, do you want to come up as well? Fire away.
Kim Brown, Committee
of the Committee. I'm Kim Kimbrough, the Chief Executive Officer of the Portland Business Alliance. We are the representative of the largest number of businesses and corporate entities in the Portland region, and we're here today to offer our support as well, enthusiastic support, for House Bill 3606. We view this bill as economic development in its purest form. We're talking about a private sector enterprise that will bring thousands of new jobs, hundreds of millions of dollars of new investment, and the corresponding new tax base, not to mention the millions of dollars of national visibility. Business in the Portland region thinks this bill means good business for Portland and for Oregon. I would deviate just a bit, and you've heard about a lot of other cities, so I have to add St. Louis to that list. Being in St. Louis several years ago before coming to Oregon and doing essentially representing the same type of entity in the same capacity, we worked very closely with the ownership group and the management of the St. Louis Cardinals. I was privileged to be a part of their effort to also get to seek a new stadium. And there were some statistics that they released that I was absolutely amazed at, and that was at 40%, and their annual ticket sales were in excess of $3 million every year. 40% of all the people that bought a ticket to the St. Louis Cardinals came from more than 100 miles away. When you come from more than 100 miles away, you can day trip it, but that's not the norm. They stay in the hotels, they eat in the restaurants, they buy gasoline, they buy sundry items, they buy souvenirs. It was huge in terms of economic development and economic impact for the area, not only around the stadium, but for many miles. The hotels were full. The restaurants were full. It was absolutely, it wasn't just the big folks that were, the larger businesses that were benefiting. It was the small, the little guys on the street. For those reasons, we ardently encourage you to support House Bill 3606. We believe it is economic development and it is a part of Oregon's future. this bill and the transportation bill are the two most important economic development bills from our perspective before you this session. Thank you.
Co-Chair Brown, members of the committee, Senator Metzger. Good afternoon. My name is Olney Pat Jr. I'm a lifelong resident of Warm Springs, Oregon, and I'm here today to express my strong support for HB 3606, also known as the baseball bill. I know many of you personally from my service the past 5 years as chairman of the Tribal Council of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. However, I'm not appearing here today as in that capacity. Rather, I am here as a private citizen of Oregon who strongly believes that bringing Major League Baseball to Oregon would be a wonderful thing for the whole state. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I've been to one baseball game in my entire life, and that was in San Francisco in 1997. I'll be attending my second game this weekend with three of my grandchildren in Seattle to see the Mariners play the Braves. So, you know, and that's going to the tickets for that game were much less than the trip itself, since my grandchildren will be coming from Pendleton. So, anyway, that'll give you an idea of how, I think, how broad baseball can attract fans. Bringing Major League Baseball to Oregon would have many benefits for our state, the most tangible of which would be economic. In addition to the thousands of jobs created during the stadium construction phase, there would be hundreds of permanent jobs generated by the 81 home games played at the new stadium. In addition, the new stadium is certain to stimulate development in the immediate vicinity, as has been the case with the new downtown ballparks in Baltimore, Denver, San Francisco, and other cities. Major League Baseball would also draw out-of-state visitors and perhaps international guests who would spend their entertainment dollars in Oregon. Also see opportunities for the tribes. You know, the tribes, Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs are big boosters of the Blazers. We have a suite in the Rose Garden as well as a number of other tickets. I know other tribes that do a similar thing as incentive programs for students and for other members of their tribes. Also, I see baseball as a possible advertising vehicle for tribally owned businesses, products, services. But beyond the direct economic benefits, I strongly believe all Oregonians will benefit from the intangible aspects of Portland becoming a true major league city. The national and international exposure Major League Baseball will bring to Oregon cannot be underestimated. In addition, as a new resident of Portland, I can appreciate how Major League Baseball will be an important addition to the quality of life in our state's largest metropolitan area. I have reviewed House Bill 3606 and am convinced that the state of Oregon is fully and completely protected from any financial risk whatsoever. Under this legislation, the baseball business risk is placed on the grantee and the team owner, not the state. That is an extremely important consideration in view of the state's current financial problems. I believe the bill's drafters have done an excellent job crafting legislation that fully protects the state interests. Simply put, under House Bill 3606, the state is not on the hook for the bonds, the state has no debt, and the state's credit rating is fully protected. This is an opportunity that is not likely to exist in the future. Oregon must act now. Please help bring Major League Baseball to Oregon by supporting House Bill 3606. Thank you.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Sure.
Chair Pat, has there ever been any discussion among the tribes to do some sort of proportional investment? I know that you know, there's been discussion by the Grand Ronde about doing that in exchange for being allowed to put up a casino in Portland, but and that's, I don't know where that is right now, but you know, it seemed to me that this was proposed originally by Mike Lehman, that it would be an excellent way to get at the funding part of this for the stadium, to have the tribes sort of proportionate to the amount of gaming that they do now, so it wouldn't break any particular tribe to all go in together on the facility. and then have a one casino.
I don't believe that that discussion has ever taken place between the tribes. It may have been discussed by some of the tribes, but our interest in it is to take part in the regular course of the stadium construction and take advantage of whatever advertising opportunities present themselves.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Co-Chair Brown, members of the committee, Senator Metzger, thank you for having us and thank you for your patience. This has been the longest 1 hour in history, I guess. I'm Harvey Platt. I'm the CEO of Platt Electric Supply in Portland, a family-owned business for the last 50 years, one of a rare breed in our industry. And I'm here today on behalf of the baseball bill. I want to digress just a little bit to talk about how I got here, just for 2 minutes. A few years ago, a fellow came to me and said, are you interested in bringing Major League Baseball to Portland or Oregon? And I, having been a sports fan for a number of years, I said, sure, I'll listen. And I think we made a small contribution and paid no mind to it, if you will. That dynamic changed about a little over a year ago. Somewhere during that process, I had the pleasure of meeting Steve Canner and getting to listen to his energy and his intelligence, and he's probably one of the brightest people I've ever met. And then I met David Kahn and Drew Mihalik and Jay Waldron and some of the other folks you met today. And about the same time, I got full recognition that our state was in a deep crisis, a crisis of confidence more than anything, and that we needed to do something to change that. And that's the reason that I'm interested and passionate about having this bill passed. It's not about baseball. Fortunately, I can go to Seattle and see baseball. It's about doing something for our community. Now I have to wear my glasses. We've been here for a long time, our company. We've seen many periods of ups and downs over that time. We've seen it all. And through all that time, we've persevered. And today we have the last locally owned company in our industry employing over 700 people. As I said, we're the last Oregon-owned business in our industry. But what's different now, it occurred to my cousin Jay and I the other day, is the media and its power. Our issues have been magnified by a myriad of bad press from the New York Times to Doonesbury. The Oregonian ran a column, which I passed out to you the other day, reflecting on an experience my cousin Jay had in a recent trip to Mexico, even though they made it look like we were both there together. The village.
I was going to ask you how the trip was.
Yeah, I wasn't there. That's bad press. The village of Punta Mita, which is some 50 or 60 miles north of Puerto Vallarta, apparently, even knows how bad things are here now. I'm going to read, for the record, just a small portion of the article the Oregonian printed. We strongly, and the article, for the benefit of the record, went on to say that Jay had seen on the news in Punta Mita how bad the schools were and the situation was in Oregon. We strongly believe in the profound need for a strong and consistent message about the positive side of Oregon, not just for the outsiders who are considering a move, but also for the residents who need to be reminded why Oregon is a great state with an optimistic future. Leaders know that they have to continually communicate to their customers, vendors, and employees, even employees' families, a consistently strong positive message about the company they work for, or the state they live in, I might say. In times of trouble, that positive communication must be doubled, tripled, quadrupled, or more. We have challenges here, but they are not much different than they are in the rest of the country. We must do something, and soon, to begin communicating that positive message to the country and to the world. HB 3606 gives us a chance to make a strong statement that Oregonians can accept a challenge, no matter what the obstacles are, and come up with an innovative plan, such as we have here, to stimulate our economy and our morale at the same time with little or no risk. 1,500 construction jobs, hundreds of full and part-time permanent jobs, stopping the flow of tourist dollars to the north, affordable family fund, and a huge morale boost for our economy, our community, excuse me. How can we not do this? I have heard some say that this is not the time. I know without a doubt that there has never been a more important time or appropriate time to seize this unique opportunity and stimulate our economy and our morale. I have looked around for something similar and have yet to find it. This is our chance to show the resolve and creativity of leaders. Build a stadium, create a new Oregon success story, and then let the world know about it. Let's have the New York Times headline next month reflect the innovation and insight of Oregonians. They can go to California and Texas to dig up the dirt. As I said earlier, I see little or no risk in HB 3606, but even if there were risks, I like to believe that the greatest risk is not taking any. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions? We appreciate you coming down today. I do have on the sign-up sheet Brad Perkins. Did you wish to testify? Come on up. Anybody else in the audience wishing to testify? Good afternoon. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee, such as it is.
Good evening, actually. Thank you, Senator Brown and committee and Rick. I come here as mainly a private citizen.
Could you state your name for the
Brad
record,
Perkins.
Please? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. I come as a private citizen, but I'm involved with commercial real estate in the city of Portland. I've been following this for quite a long time, and I've been, you know, it's the first hearing that I've come to and presentation I've come to regarding baseball. I'm thoroughly impressed by the gentlemen that have spoke this previously. It seems like it's a very well-conceived process to have this funded. I think the vision is right. I think the time is right. My experience in the Portland area, especially the inner city, northeast in particular, it's well-suited for a stadium. There's a dire need for some infrastructure changes by ODOT, which I have seen in regards to development aspects of change in the area. It's proven that the Rose Garden has had some problems from the very beginning as far as infrastructure, retail. There's talks of the Coliseum being changed over. There's a need for the school district building to be taken a strong look at as to its change. You see a beautiful drawing here of a vision that goes beyond just the economic benefits, but it's been spoken a couple times already in regards to the vision and how the response of people seeing the team through that beautiful view of Mount Hood and the beautiful view from the stadium to our downtown that could sell Portland to many people that wish to come here that haven't yet. This gives another reason for people to come here. In my business, I deal a lot with tax increment financing aspects of urban renewal, rejuvenation of neighborhoods. I've been involved with historic preservation a great deal. This is another way of financing in a tax increment way, but it's more in an income-based tax increment financing rather than a property tax base. I think that's a very smart approach. And as far as what's been already stated to you earlier, the risk to the state is minuscule compared to the grand benefits that you would have, especially with tourism. I was watching the Seattle Mariners the other night on TV, and they were talking about the economic benefit of a family being able to afford coming to Seattle and watching the Mariners game. They had this special called the $50 special. You get four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Cokes. I thought, gee, isn't that an opportunity that we need to have to go walk downtown, walk from downtown, take the MAX, meet your family down there without having to drive, pick up your car later from downtown, whatever. The infrastructure as far as the MAX and future possibility of the streetcar, which I'm on the committee that is planning the streetcar in the east side, it's going to be going right along that area. So to wrap it up, I'll just say this, that let's believe in another team besides the Trailblazers.
Thank you. I'd also like to enter into the record a letter from Pete Ward, Travel and Cruise Center, in support of House Bill 3606. I think believe all members have have copies. Anybody else wishing to testify? Come on up. Oh, you can just come on up.
Good evening, Senators and Mr. Stembridge. This will really be brief, seriously. I'm a huge baseball fan, a huge sports fan. In fact, my wife and I are going to Seattle. We leave tomorrow night. We're going to see two games with our best friends from Staten.
I need you to state your name for the record.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Bob Kinsley from Sublimity.
Thanks.
Anyway, four of us are going up to Seattle for the weekend to see two Brave games. So we'll be staying in a hotel two nights and doing everything else that you do in Seattle. But I also wanted to address the family feeling that a lot of us remember when we had a different Portland Trailblazer team. Part of the reason the Mariners have been so successful, the big reason for their overall appeal, is the feeling of family you get. We all know Edgar, we know John Olerud, and we care about him as people. So, you know, that kind of community spirit is a tough thing to attach dollars to, but it sure creates family unity, I mean community unity. And that's the kind of thing that I think we're looking at when we talk about bringing a team to Portland. I was about 50-50, in spite of the fact that I'm a huge baseball fan, coming in here today because I had some lingering questions. But after hearing all of these people, their statistics, and the general feeling of optimism, I'm fully in support now, and I feel good about the whole thing. So I'll take that back to my rural community of Sublimity, and I'll have a good time this weekend watching the Mariners and the Braves in Seattle.
Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Brown and committee members. My name is Dick Campbell. I'm a lifelong Oregon resident. I retired last year from Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, 30 years plus. I just have one question at random out of quite a few. I've read that the stadium is intended to be a baseball-only stadium. That suggests that during the off-season it would just sit there. I'd like to get some confirmation or something to the contrary about that. And in that vein, during the season, when the team is out of town, is there any possibility that college and high school kids could possibly use the stadium? And related to that is the question of a retractable roof. I've heard discussions of that. And that's all I have.
The retractable roof question I think I can answer. It's my understanding that Portland rain days in terms of the baseball season are fewer than many of those on the East Coast. So folks have said it's not worth the money to do the retractable roof. In terms of the other question, I cannot answer that. Steve, do you want to come forward?
Well, the retractable roof might make it usable during the off season. That's the only reason.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, of course, one of the things about baseball, if you include all the days when they're practicing as well, one of the great things is you get activity from the major league team for well over 100 days, which is quite a lot. And then preparation of the field takes up quite a bit more. But baseball stadia are used occasionally for other community events, occasionally a large gathering speech, very occasionally perhaps for some unique athletic event. They're not multi-use facilities, however. Every city that's done this rate, you don't have baseball and football, for example, in the same field. But there is usability to some extent if it can be worked out with the city and the ownership, so it doesn't interfere with the proper field, and so it does become a good community draw. And typically, a baseball stadium, because it has that much life around it, also has residential, retail, and a lot of shops and restaurants that have critical mass. One problem we've had at the Rose Garden is we haven't had that critical mass. Baseball, because it's 81 games, 100 dates roughly total, does have the critical mass, and so those parts of the facility are used all year round. There are meetings, there are charitable functions, and so on at all the baseball stadia around the country.
What are the locations being discussed?
Well, HOK is involved with the city in a site study now, and currently they're looking at 7 principal sites. The Blanchard site has been mentioned, the Blanchard School District site. There's a site a little bit out from downtown Lentz that Commissioner Leonard is particularly interested in looking at.
I'm not surprised.
And then there are 5 sites in the downtown area, all within 3/4 miles of the heart of the city. The main post office on Northwest Hoyt, next to the main train station, the intercity rail station, a site Burnside and 405 intersection near the brewery blocks, West Burnside, the current Lincoln High School property. I don't want to suggest we're getting rid of a high school. Actually, that would involve rebuilding a high school on the west part of that property and having the ballpark down, leaning toward downtown, toward 405. And then finally, the interim park, of course, will be PGE Park with some minor tweaking, and it is still a possible site. So that, those are the 7 that are most likely at this point. That process is ongoing.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Metzger, last question.
I didn't hear Welch is on that list. I'm backing away from this
proposal.
Or
Cottage Grove. Yeah.
Thank you. You
want to
come up? Sure, go ahead.
Any consideration given to some place like Wilsonville, moving them down into the valley a little bit, which would also allow easy access for Vancouver and Portland,
right,
and draw us much closer in southern and central Oregon?
Yeah. The interesting thing is the experience of Major League Baseball is that that doesn't work. It sounded like a great idea. Put it out on freeway access. You have to build lots of parking. All the stadia, the ballparks that are working now, are intimate in the city ballparks where you rely on your mass transit. Actually, for people from Ashland, for example, it's probably easier to get to downtown Portland than it is to Wilsonville because you're going to come in by train, plane, or you drive all the way into Portland and stay at the car, and then you use mass transit. The stadium will certainly be accessible for light rail, hopefully the main train station, and other trolley and travel services. Everywhere else it's worked. Camden Yards, Jacobs Field, Coors Field, Pac Bell, all of the great new stadia are built in the lively part of a metropolitan area.
Okay, on that happy note, sorry about Wilsonville. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3606. Stay tuned.
And you have that letter in the chat.